Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I have a great show planned for you today. I have two guests joining me. Sarah Leathers and Ellen Palmer are the co-founders of Healing Meals Community Project in Connecticut, and they're going to talk to us about their wonderful program where they prepare fresh organic meals for people who are ill, along with their entire family. So it's really quite an amazing program, and I'm really excited to have them on. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit. First, I wanted to share with you some things going on in the news. Unfortunately, most of it not good. And some things that are going on around the area, ways that you can get involved and become an active citizen. So first off, I am just so upset about, you know, the censoring that's going on with climate information. I mean, it's clear, I think 99% of all scientists agree that climate change is here and it is impacted by human activity. However, we have someone in the White House that does not agree with that or is not willing to accept it as fact. And so systematically, he is doing everything he can to dismantle the agencies that have been set up in our government to protect us, and the Department of Agriculture being one of them. And scientists are quitting. I mean, I just wrote about Louis Ziska, who has been working at the U.S. Agricultural Research Service in the Department of Agriculture for over 20 years. He is quitting because his latest research shows that rice grown today is not as nutritious as it used to be due to climate change. And they just, you know, do not want to accept that. And they're making him, they're burying that information. They're trying not to get it out. Of course, his quitting is bringing it to the forefront and people are hearing about it. But on top of that, he's also moving two of these agencies, the Economic Research Service and the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, to Kansas City. These are people that have been working in the government for, you know, most of their lives, who are now being told if you want to keep your job, you have to move to Kansas City. So 70 to 80% of them are quitting. And this is his systematic way of dismantling the agencies that we need to protect us. The same type of censoring is happening in the Environmental Protection Agency and the Food and Drug Administration. All across the board, this kind of censoring is going on, and it is scary. You know, it's 1984, but much worse. And, you know, we all have to really pay attention. It's up to all of us to see what's going on and pay attention and to take some action. You know, one of the things I wrote about today, two of the things in my newsletter this week, was about GMO salmon, which is, you know, quickly getting approval and is going to be in the markets before we know it, unless we all really petition and do everything we can to prevent it. I mean, genetically modified salmon is not only, I mean, it grows faster, granted, so it will make the companies more money, but for the people eating it, there's nothing good about it. And it has not been thoroughly tested. And the worst part is that these salmon are being raised in pens, and farm-raised salmon statistically always gets out. I think they say over 2 million pen salmon escape into the Atlantic every year. Well, those salmon were GMO salmon, and they mated with wild salmon, it would deplete the whole salmon population. And the same is going to happen with other fish, because this is just the beginning. This is just the tip of the iceberg. So we really have to pay attention. We have to let our voices be heard, and we just can't sit back and say, you know, we can't deal with it, which is so much what we want to do, because there's just so many things that are just overwhelming, and there's just too much to deal with. But we have to stay on top of it and pay attention. Another one is what's coming out with 5G. I mean, they are rolling out 5G technology everywhere so fast, and there have been no studies really as to the health or environmental effects of 5G. What we do know is that they need to put the antennas every few houses in order to make it work. So we're going to have more radioactive antennas nearby our homes, nearby our schools, and it's scary. And New Hampshire is the first state that officially established a commission just recently to study the health and environmental effects of this technology. And we have a local grassroots organization called the Citizens for 5G Awareness. You can find them online and on Facebook. They are writing to our legislators, and they are asking all of us to participate in that bombardment of emails and letters to ask our New York State officials to also do their due diligence and do the research and check out whether this is safe for us before they put it by all of our houses. Again, you know, technology has a great place in our society. We're not going to be going backwards, but at the same time, you can't just storm ahead without making sure that it's safe for all of us. So that's really important. If you saw the front page of the New York Times yesterday, they were writing about the water shortages that are facing 25% of our world's population right now and how bad it's going to be by 2030. And it is scary. 25% of the world's population in over 17 countries right now use as much water as they have saved, you know, with all their, you know, water catchment pools and all the ways, the aquifers and all the ways that countries, you know, stockpile up their water, they're running out and they're using more and, they're, you know, the populations are growing and they just can't meet the demand and people waste water left and right and farmers need water for growing the crops, but people need water for drinking, and it's just not good. So check out that article in the New York Times. I put a link on my website as well. It's just really another thing we need to pay attention to. Some things that are going on in the city that you want to pay attention to and some ways that you can actually become active in some of these protests that we need to rally against. This weekend, finally, the NOFA Summer Conference is here. We've been talking about it for months. That is, NOFA stands for the Northeast Organic Farming Association, and every state in the Northeast has their own chapter. So I'm on the board of NOFA New York. There's the NOFA Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Maine. Anyway, they are all coming together in the summer conference. In the winters, they all have their own conference, but in the summer, they come together at one of the colleges, usually somewhere in Massachusetts. This one is at Hampshire College in Amherst. The theme is Nutrition Matters, Soil Health Builds Human Health. And it's going to be a great weekend. If you are free this weekend, I really recommend getting up there. It's August 9th through 11th. You can go on the website, NOFA Summer Conference, and you will get all the information you need to know. The next week, August 14th in Albany, there is a preliminary injunction on the hearing that repealed the Religious Exemption Act. And parents are trying to get this religious exemption back in place or at least put a stay on the repeal, on the rejection, so that it can be discussed more and parents can really let their voices be heard. But right now, the religious exemption has been repealed. And if you are a parent that does not want to vaccinate your child, you are really not in a good place. So this is really important. Parents need to have a right to choose what is good for their children. You know, when my kids were young, you know, they got maybe, you know, 15, 20 vaccinations. Now it's up to 60. I mean, how many vaccinations can one little body hold without worrying about the interactions that it's going to cause? And with all the combinations, last week I wrote about the combinations of some of the pesticides and how you put them together, they become more toxic. I use the example of, you know, simple cleaning products, ammonia and bleach. You put them together, it's completely toxic, it can be fatal. Same thing can happen with these pharmaceutical drugs. You don't know what happens in combination. I mean, people take, you know, depressants and they drink alcohol and it's a fatal combination. So there's so many bad interactions that can't possibly be tested. They can't test all the different variables. And so parents have a right to be concerned. And this is an opportunity on August 14th at 10 a.m. at the Albany County Supreme Court to let your voices be heard. So I hope you will join in with the Alliance for Vaccine Freedom and let your voice be heard. Also on August 14th, if you're down on Long Island, there's a rally to stop the Williams Pipeline. I've been talking about the Williams Pipeline for a while. I thought Cuomo had rejected it, but it seems to be back. They are pushing forward. And the Williams Pipeline would take fracked gas from Pennsylvania through New York Harbor, past Staten Island, through Long Island, you know, past Long Island Harbor. If anything happens, if it leaks, which most pipelines do, it can be devastating to all of New York City and Long Island. It's just crazy. So there's a protest outside of Senator Kaminsky's office in Rockville Center on August 14th from 12 to 1. On August 15th, there's a really nice thing you can do, a Midsummer Beach Herb Walk with Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, and that's going to be at Roosevelt Beach. You can meet in the gazebo. Ellen Kamai is just such a wealth of information, and if you've never taken a medicinal herbal walk with her, you're in for a real treat, and it's free. So check that out. Cornell Cooperative Extension is continuing their Garden to Table series. The next one coming up is August 19th. It's a freezer berry jam. That's great. And then on August 23rd is the NOFA New York Gala, which I've been talking about for a really long time. There's still tickets available. It's going to be a great, great evening if you can make it. It's up in Poughkeepsie at the Locust Grove Estate. And we have some great speakers. Actress and filmmaker Isabella Rossellini will be the gala's featured speaker. Onika Abramson will be there. Scott Chasky, poet, farmer, and educator of the Taconic Land Trust, will be the master of ceremonies. There will be a silent auction, a live auction, farm to table dinner. Really great night. So if you can come out and support NOFA New York and their work to protect our organic integrity and help our local farmers, please come. August 31st is a Soil Saturday, Hawthorne Valley Farm. They will be my guests next week on the show, and they are having a series of Soil Saturdays. And you can find out more about that at their website on Hawthorne Valley Farm. This is a really fun event, the annual North Fork Foodie Tour. And this is a self-guided tour. This is their 13th year doing this. It's sponsored by the North Fork Synagogue. And it is an array of 20 different locations that they have curated and put together, all organic, not all organic, but mostly organic, but local food producers. And you can have behind-the-scene tours of all their establishments. And it's really a wonderful event if you are free on September 8th. September 13th and 14th is the 5th Annual Food Lab out at Stony Brook University Southampton campus. And there's more. So check out my website for all these events. You know, of course, October 5th, the New York Times Food Festival is coming up. So there's so many events going on. I don't want to take any more time to go over them with you because I want to share my weekly recipe and, of course, get my guests on. So this week, in my attempt to address food waste, I'm always trying to figure out what I can do with the tops of vegetables that I don't eat. So I grew beautiful onions this year. I don't know if any of you have seen some of the pictures of my harvesting, but I'm harvesting some beautiful onions. But what to do with the onion tops? They look like scallions, but they're not quite scallions. They're a little bit too big and tough to just use the way one uses scallions. But by steaming them and making a pesto out of them, I did not put them in my compost. And this is the first time I did this, and it came out really great. Now, I used a chickpea pasta, mostly because I wanted to try out this chickpea pasta. I heard that Banza makes a very good brand of chickpea pasta, and I wanted to try it. But, of course, this pesto can be made and put onto any pasta of your choice. So I used one box of the Banza chickpea elbow pasta, which is a half a pound box. a half a cup of blanched onion tops. So I first blanched a whole bunch of the onion tops, and I measured out a half a cup, and that's what I used to make this. And I made it just in my little mini Cuisinart. I didn't want to make a whole big batch until I tried it out first. So this is just a little batch, which was perfect for this 8-ounce box of pasta. So I added 4 cloves of garlic to that, 1/4 cup of parsley, 1/4 cup of walnuts, 1/4 cup of olive oil, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, and 1/8 teaspoon of pepper. And I just pureed that up and pulsed it and pulsed it and pulsed it until it was a really smooth, bright green pesto. Then I, you know, of course I cooked the pasta according to the directions. And then as soon as the pasta comes out, you drain it and then you run it under some cold water to stop the cooking and to wash off any of the starch that hangs out on the surface of the pasta. And then just let that drain a bit so you get the water out of it. And then in a large bowl, I mixed up the pesto with the pasta. Then I added, and you can leave this out if you are vegan, but I added 1/2 cup of fresh mozzarella cubes and 1 cup of cherry tomatoes, because I'm also, of course, harvesting lots of cherry tomatoes now, and mixed that up. And it was just delicious. Of course, you can substitute a vegan mozzarella cheese if you want, or just leave it out. But it was really, really delicious. You can also, if you want, add some steamed broccoli into this or any vegetable of your choice to make it more of a full meal. But I encourage you all to try it. Super easy and really delicious. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you my two guests, Sarah Leathers and Ellen Palmer. They are the co-founders of Healing Meals Community Project, which is a nonprofit organization that has two missions. One is to provide healthy organic meals to people in a health crisis and their families. And the other mission is fostering compassion and empowering youth and adult volunteers in the communities. And so they prepare and deliver delicious organic meals for families dealing with a serious health crisis. They cook for the entire family for 12 weeks. And uniquely, all of the nutrient-rich meals are prepared by the youth volunteers working alongside adult mentors. And they also have an executive chef that guides it all. And then it gets delivered by volunteers that they call delivery angels. And I'm going to invite them both on to tell us more about their work and what they do. Sarah and Ellen, are you with me?
Yes. We are. Thank you for having us.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining me. You know, I didn't actually go into your background, but so maybe I could just have each of you tell me a little bit as to what drew you to this kind of work. What was your inspiration? And Sarah, maybe you could start.
Yes. Thank you so much for having us this morning.
Sure.
For me, particularly, my sister started an organization like this in California in 2007. And I watched what she developed over the years, and I knew I really wanted to start this here in Connecticut. And then in 2012, I had my own major health crisis. And for me, the real healing came when I really thought about how to nourish my body the best. And that was through really healthy organic food. That made a tremendous difference for me. So putting those two things together, I just kept thinking about how and when I was going to start this. And then I got introduced to Ellen. And the story goes from there.
Thank you, ladies.
Okay. And Ellen, for you?
Similarly, I always had health issues growing up, and I was just a product of the traditional medical protocol, prescriptions, meds, surgeries, procedures, and I was able to take control of my health in my early 30s through diet and exercise and lifestyle and really understanding how to thrive. And I went back to school. I changed my career and went back to school to become a certified integrative holistic health and life coach. And I had the absolute divine delight of meeting Sarah. And we started working on another project. And when she mentioned that she was going to be starting this, I was just so passionate about working with youth. I was seeing a lot of youth in my private practice and really wanted to do all I could to set these kids up for success in their bodies. And so I was in 100%.
So exciting. So how do you, Sarah, find your clients?
So for us, when we started, we really just trusted organically. Those that came to us really word of mouth. We wanted to make sure we could serve everybody, every family that needed our support in the beginning. And as we grew, our clients actually would be at their chemo sessions together or radiation sessions or doctor's offices. And they would be telling the nurses and the doctors about the meals that were being provided to them by Healing Meals. And so over time, we are now connected through many of the hospitals and social workers and clinics. But really, most of our clients do come word of mouth. And like you mentioned, we serve those clients for 12 weeks. And so our clients are reaching back out to their nurses and the doctors and saying what a difference it's making for them and the impact it's having on the entire family.
Uh-huh. And what happens at the end of 12 weeks? Because as we all know, very often when you're going through chemo and radiation, it goes for much longer than 12 weeks. So what happens after 12 weeks, after you've spoiled them with delicious organic food?
We have a couple options available to them right now. If they want to stay on and they can afford to pay a nominal fee, a reduced rate fee, we will be able to keep them on for an additional 12 weeks. Uh-huh. One of the things we'll talk a little bit about later is one of our initiatives for this upcoming year is to do much more community education too, so that they can take what we've done for them and teach them how to fish and really create this nutrition for themselves and their families on an ongoing basis.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. That's great. And so right now you're just in Connecticut, is that correct? What areas of Connecticut do you serve?
We are. We're based in Bloomfield, Connecticut. And we are serving about 50 towns within the greater Hartford area. We, our delivery angels travel 45 minutes in any direction. So in any given week, we're serving right now about 45 families. And we can be in anywhere from, you know, Bristol to Torrington to Enfield and anywhere in between. So we're covering a big area right now, but we know the need is great and we want to be able to serve all of Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And so 45 families, you know, just doing the math, we all know there's, I'm sure, way more families than that dealing with it. Do you have more requests than you can service, or do just not that many people seek out your service?
We currently have had quite a wait list. Right now, for some reason, we're at capacity, but we don't have any wait list right now. But that changes in any given week. Our client manager could receive, you know, 4 or 5 calls. And then we have periods like we are now where we're able to serve everybody. The hope is that we never have a wait list. We want to be able to serve every family that asks and wants our meals. So that's the goal.
Uh-huh. And what is your capacity, did you say, 45?
Our capacity is 80 people right now. We are in a fairly small kitchen located in Bloomfield, but are in the process of building a second kitchen with another nonprofit right now where we will be able to share that kitchen space, and it's going to be much more efficient, and we'll be able to grow our capacity.
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. That's great. And what was your thoughts in choosing to prepare only organic? Is that this from your nutritional training? Have you found that organic is much better for everybody?
We have. We are really committed to organic. Every client that we work with is in the middle of a very scary and dangerous time. They're in the middle of an acute health crisis. And knowing how the body functions, the body was designed to be fueled with vitamins and nutrients, minerals, and clean water. I mean, that's what it understands. And so when we take in chemicals from pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, artificial dyes, artificial colors, artificial sweeteners, the body doesn't know what to do with that. And so it spends its energy trying to understand what to do with it, where to put it, where to tuck it away safely in the body. All of that detracts from the body's mission of maintaining a sense of well-being. So for us, it matters tremendously that we're not contributing to the chemical burden that the body is already trying to figure out. We want all of the body's energy to go towards healing. So we partner with local farms who produce beyond organic food. They really are deeply committed to meeting us in our mission to provide the cleanest local produce, which is just loaded with live enzymes. So we're delighted to be able to support the local farmers who believe in the same process that we do, which is organic.
Uh-huh. And so then what happens in the wintertime? Obviously, you don't have access to the fresh organic. Are you getting it from, shipped in, or do you have a wholesaler that you work with?
So what's nice is we have a local farm that provides close to 4,000 pounds of organic produce throughout the year. And what we're able to do this year, we've had a couple of donations for some equipment and refrigeration that allows us to really prepare some of those vegetables and keep them throughout the winter time so we can draw on that. But what we also have is some wholesale relationships with organic companies that are currently supplying us.
Uh-huh. So you do use some frozen, like you'll freeze the green beans, for instance, and then use them in the winter.
Exactly, yes.
Perfect, perfect. And from your training, did you find that vegetables lose any of their nutrient value? I know there's difference of opinion in that, whether it's fresh or frozen. What do you think?
Well, yes, in our training, we understand it's all about the live enzymes. You know, has that fruit or vegetable maintained its full DNA expression? Has it stayed on the vine long enough to express itself? And if you pick it then and you freeze it, that stays intact and you lose a little bit of it. We find in some instances that that's better than getting organic produce from Mexico or California, where it's picked, it's shipped, and it lands in our kitchen 2 weeks later. Well, a lot of those enzymes no longer exist.
Right.
So it depends on the situation.
Yeah, I agree with that. Absolutely. And then another question I have, what about the diet? Do you choose the diet for these families, or are you following a diet that is being prescribed by a doctor? How does that work?
So we have, again, we are an affiliate of my sister's organization who's been doing this for 12 years. So when we started, we really used their menu and their protocol with their different, their nutrition educator and so forth. We don't, we are 100% gluten-free, dairy-free, corn-free, and soy-free. We don't have a particular, like we're not a diabetic protocol or somebody who's dealing with congestive heart failure. We are an organic, very clean, very nutritious meal program. But we are not specific to different health conditions that families are going through. And all of our clients know that. We have a call with them prior to them coming on the program to make sure they understand what they will be receiving.
And what's nice, because our menu is free of all of those intense foods, it's...
Can you say what those foods are again, please?
So we don't do any gluten, any dairy, any corn, or any soy.
Uh-huh. So if you look at that protocol, that's a low inflammatory diet, and many of the chronic conditions and diseases that most are suffering with are due to inflammation. So we feel really good that our protocol really serves the majority of the population.
Mm-hmm. And what about sugar?
Oh, we keep it super low. Every once in a while, we'll send out a banana chocolate chip cookie, which is super low glycemic. But we do consider that any of the sugars that we're using coconut palm sugar, we're using maple syrup, but there isn't any cane sugar that goes into any of our recipes. And if you look at the vegetable combinations, we do keep a close eye on that as well.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, you know, because I one of the things that I used to do, I'm not doing it currently because I'm doing other things, but I used to cook for clients, you know, that were coming out of health crises also. And, you know, I just remember, you know, someone going through chemo and, you know, miso soup is something that's really healthy, you know. So that's why I would actually probably personally rethink the soy, just because miso soup is so healthy for people going through chemo and radiation. But, you know, this person said, oh, I can't eat chemo. But meanwhile, they come home with Dunkin' Donuts. And I'm like, what? You know, you can eat Dunkin' Donuts. You know, doctor says don't eat soy, but they don't say don't eat sugar and artificial color and all this other stuff. So
it's
always interesting what they pick to tell their clients not to eat.
I know.
So let's take a couple minute break. And when we come back, I really want to hear about your youth development program. How do you get the young people involved and how does that work? So everyone listening, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Sarah Leathers and Ellen Palmer from Healing Meals Community Project. Be right back.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today, we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information, the kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one Progressive Radio Network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of Progressive Radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to prn.fm, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, give them more choices. This is where you'll hear in the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis, and there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right, thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
Welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani and I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And if you're just joining me, I'm talking with Sarah Leathers and Ellen Palmer, who are the founders of Healing Meals Community Project in Connecticut. So, Ellen and Sarah, right before the break, I wanted to ask you about your youth development program. And Ellen, maybe you can address this. How do you find your youth and how long do they stay in the program?
When we originally began in 2016, we gathered the people we knew that we had been talking with in the community, and their teenagers joined us in the kitchen, started at age 14. And what's happened since then has been such a delight and a bit of a miracle in that we do very little outreach, if any, to recruit teenagers to come and join us in the kitchen through word of mouth, similarly to how we receive our clients. Through word of mouth, friends talking to friends, kids come. And there is a school locally that does need, they do require some community service hours. So we receive a lot of those kids that are interested in our program. But they don't just come and satisfy the hour requirement for community service. They stay. Some have stayed for years. And we find that it just continues to grow. Every month we have an orientation where anyone that's interested, a youth or an adult, can come and hear about the different volunteer opportunities. And consistently, we have 30, 40, and at one time, we had 70 people that came to hear about what we're doing. And so they come because they maybe hear about it. Maybe they want to do something a little different. Maybe their friends are doing it. Maybe they have to. Maybe they are voluntold, as we say. But they stay because of the difference that they feel in their heart when they leave. They leave with such a sense of pride when they finish a cooking shift, or if they're supporting us at one of our community dinners. There's nothing that compares to that. Kids are able to start coming into our kitchen to work with us at age 14. And we find that that's a really important age. That's when they're most at risk for negative social influence. And so when they come into our kitchen, we hold them in a very high regard, as if they are absolutely capable of accomplishing anything they want in their lives. And what we find is that these kids rise up because we expect them to be their best selves. They find a way to it. When they come into our kitchen, we ask them to put their cell phones away and come with their problems left at the door. We come into a circle. We give them an opportunity to take a deep breath and really think about the clients that we're serving. So we help them change their headspace. And because they're working alongside of other youth, they have an opportunity to communicate with them in a different way. Because they're not texting or what have you, they really are just learning how to communicate, read social cues, and really just learn some lifelong skills. We have integrated a leadership program within the infrastructure of the program, where once a youth has reached 50 hours, they receive an apron with their name on it. And it's so interesting and exciting to see them really be inspired by that and get some extra hours in so they can achieve that. And then when they get to 100 hours, they get a chef coat with their name on it. So the youth development program is really about holding kids in a loving place to achieve all that they want to and help them learn some lifelong skills.
And I just want to add too that I think why these kids come back every week is we receive thank you cards from our clients weekly. And we read those cards to the youth and we say to them, you did this. You made this impact on this family. And for a 14-year-old to realize what an impact they're having in their community is really powerful. And so we also ask the kids to make a 3-month commitment. And so it's not a one-off, you know, we're expecting you to come in and we're going to take time to train you. And we want you to stay. We want you to understand all that goes in to what we do, but they learn so much too. We have a nutrition educator who does a weekly educational moment. So the kids are gaining so much knowledge, but also feeling this huge sense of purpose.
Mm-hmm. That's so great. So does that mean that all of your cooking is happening after school hours? Are you cooking in the evening for the next day, or how does that work? And are you providing 3 meals a day to these families, or just the main meal, like dinner?
So the way we are set up right now, we cook after school. So we have adult volunteers that come in earlier in the day to help prep. But the youth come into the kitchen at 3 o'clock on Wednesday. So from 3 to 6, they're preparing meals for 80 people every week. And so a lot gets done in a short period of time. They have a critical place in the operation. And then we come back usually with a different group of volunteers on Thursday to package from 3 to 5. So what we do right now is we're currently serving 5 meals per week for each person in the family. And we also prepare an immune broth, which is designed specifically for the person who is in the midst of their health crisis. So each week we send out a chicken dish, a fish dish, a couple of vegetarian dishes, a soup or a stew. And additionally, we send the immune broth.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody was vegetarian or plant-based, they couldn't really participate in your program.
No, they can. Many of so those 2 non-meat meals are nutritionally dense meals.
And we can double those up. So if we do have a client that doesn't eat fish, or a client that is a vegetarian, we will just double up on those meals for them.
Uh-huh. So you're cooking one day a week. So the other meals, are they freezing them when they get the whole week's worth at one delivery? Is that it?
They do. They receive all of their meals either on Thursday evening. We come back on Thursday and we package everything up. And our delivery angels go out Thursday evening, or they go out Friday morning. And those meals are all fresh. And so we suggest that they eat the fish first and then the chicken and so forth. But they can choose to freeze it if they want, but it's still, it's good for them for the week.
Wow. Uh-huh. So if they have a large family and they're getting food for the whole week, they really need an extra refrigerator.
Well, so what we've learned, that's a good, very good question, is we did have a family of eight one time that was a young girl in the family who was ill with cancer. So what we did is you'd need a second refrigerator. But there were a number of small children in the family. So we did four sets of meals for that family, and that seemed to work well for them.
Uh-huh. Right. Good. And so where does your funding come from?
So over the years, it took us a couple of years to prove ourselves. In the beginning, 100% was coming from individual donors. But as we've grown, about 40% now comes from foundations and grants. We have about 15 to 18% that comes from corporate donors. And then the rest is all individual donations.
Wow,
so we're growing and the need is growing. And so we're always looking for additional opportunities for, corporate sponsors and some potentially we're looking at doing some pilot studies and looking for some national funders as well.
Uh-huh. And so what are you looking to do next? What's your next move in growing your company?
So we have some exciting projects that we're working on right now in Connecticut and working with some different nonprofit organizations. One is a mental health program. We feel really strongly. Ellen and I both are graduates of the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, and we know that supporting the mind, body, and the spirit is so important. And we got connected with Mental Health Connecticut, and we're doing a study with them around connection and how food changes how people feel. We're working with an organization that works with people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and how can we support their clients that are living independently. And we're also working with a low-income housing project on another project in Connecticut with some farming. And then for us, we feel, as Ellen had mentioned, we feel really almost responsible to educate our greater community about the importance of not only nourishing our bodies with healthy food, but what difference it makes to each of us when we are doing something that's really purposeful and that we're supporting each other in our greater community. And so that's a big piece of it. And then we're part of the Food is Medicine Coalition, which is a national organization. It's a group of meal-to-go programs around the country. And that for us is about changing policy. It's about having our senators and our governors understand that food matters in the work that we're doing, in what's happening with our healthcare system. And the more we can educate and get people to understand that, the more we can move people forward and get people healthier.
You're so right. You know, it's like, I don't know, I'm sure many of my listeners out there caught the presidential debates, that happened recently. And, healthcare, of course, was right up there in what they're talking about, but only one person mentioned food. You know, only one person brought food to the topic, and you can't really talk about the healthcare situation without talking about why are so many people sick and what can we do about our food and what can we do about how people eat and changing that paradigm so that everyone's not getting so sick.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And I think we both feel like it's coming. You know, there's it's a better topic now than it was a few years ago. And when, you know, we talk about what we're doing, you know, some people don't look at us as crazy. but it's going to take some time. And we just believe so strongly in this that we're going to just keep continuing to doing the work that we're doing and supporting as many people as we can.
And having as many conversations as we possibly can.
Well, that's how you do it. You know, starting small, starting from the ground up is really such a great way to go. I love that you're doing the work with the young people. You know, I get volunteers here. I cook for a big Thanksgiving feast and Christmas feast for a local food pantry. And we feed about 1,000 people for those two holidays. And I have people coming here who have been coming with their families for years. I think this will be my 25th year doing it. And the program's grown where I think we originally fed maybe 150 or 200 people, and it's now up to 1,000. But every once in a while when I'm like overwhelmed and I think, oh, I can't keep doing this, you know, I think of the families that are volunteering or that are coming that have nowhere else to go to volunteer. And as you said, you know, for these young people to feel like they're doing something that's meaningful and to see the reactions from the people that are benefiting is just invaluable. Mm-hmm. And it's just wonderful.
Thank you for your commitment to this as well.
Yeah, it's wonderful. So you said you're moving to a new space. What is your projection? What are you hoping to be able to, how are you hoping to be able to grow? And do you want to grow quickly or, you know, there's that fine point, right? Right now you have 80 people and you really can give the dedication that you need to those 80 people. What is the sweet point that you think you could grow to and still be able to give the love and support that you do?
Great question. We do feel like we're a bit of at a tipping point. You know, we have grown really quickly and we know the need is great. And for us, we want to continue what we do really well and not grow so quickly that we can't manage it all and do it well and have our volunteers feel appreciated and have our clients feel supported. The kitchen space that we're in the midst of building is going to be a much better layout. It's going to give us more kitchen equipment to spread out and do our work. And so just that alone will allow us capacity-wise to grow for, you know, storage and all of that. So we don't anticipate changing the model at all, at least through this fall. And then we're going to just, you know, see how we do. But this year we look to do about 20,000 meals. We did 14,000 last year, and we're going to be doing about 20,000 this year.
Wow. That's a lot of meals.
It is a lot of meals.
Mm-hmm. A lot of meals. So how many students or youth volunteers do you have at one time?
Every week on the two shifts that our youth come in, we have probably a total of about 15 or 16. Now it's the summertime, and what's been really great is we have had so many youth wanting to be involved. And we're getting all of this fresh produce from some of the local farms, which comes in pretty dirty. So we actually have added a shift with our youth that they come in on Wednesday mornings and they help wash and clean and get all the produce ready to be prepped. So that's added probably another 8 youth. And like I said, our youth make a 3-month commitment. So what's been interesting is as they get ready for school, we're going to lose some in the fall because of sports or other activities that they have. And then we may gain them back in the winter. But they, you know, they keep coming back and we're always gaining new youth. For us, it's always so sad when our youth go off to college. We miss them because they've been such a big part of what we're doing. But we always have the opportunity to bring new youth in.
Uh-huh. And do you get the recipes from your sister's organization out on the West Coast? Or I think somewhere I read you have your own executive chef, correct?
We do. We have an executive chef and we have a nutrition and wellness educator. Some of the recipes do come from the Ceres Community Project and their cookbook. But seasonally, we like to be able to use what we're getting locally. And so a lot of the recipes that we use now, our executive chef and nutrition educator work together. So we now have a winter menu, a spring menu, a summer menu, and a fall menu. And then seasonally, whatever we're getting from the local farm, we want to use. And so our sides and so forth can change every week based on what we're getting from the farms.
Right, right. That's great. That's great. I know when I harvest vegetables, that cleaning process can totally put a damper on my day. I'm just not expecting it. You know, it's like I'll come in with these vegetables and all of a sudden you have to deal with them. You can't just leave them out on the counter. And, you know, I had somewhere I had to go and next thing I know, 2 hours have gone by and I'm like spinning salad greens. And
exactly. We feel your pain. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a sweet pain though, right?
It is. And it's a tremendous help to have our young youth volunteers come into the kitchen and do this with us. And it's different. It's fun for them.
Uh-huh.
And we have where we're located now. We're actually on a 125-acre farm. And we have some of our own raised beds there. A lot of our herbs, our medicinal herbs. So it's really exciting when we can send our youth up to the garden to pick.
Oh, yeah.
They're learning a lot from that as well. So that's really, it's really fun for them to send them up there. And sometimes they don't always come back with the right thing. But, you know, they're always, to taste something fresh out of the garden is, you know, if you've never had that opportunity or to pick a carrot out of the ground for the first time is really exciting.
Right, right. Going back to your meals and the things that you use or don't use. Where do you guys stand when it comes to oil and salt?
We use pink Himalayan salt. We really love the mineral base there. And with regard to oils, I think oils are some of the most toxic properties that we can put in our body if we're not mindful. And so if we are cooking with oil, we often cook with coconut oil. And we use olive oil as a condiment. Mm-hmm. And we also use avocado oil.
Right. Uh-huh. So are most of your recipes then like roasted in the oven as opposed to on the stovetop or are they stewed? What are most of your recipes?
Really depends on the season, wouldn't you say,
yes,
Sarah?
Yeah.
It really just depends in how much surface area we have available to us on the cooktop. So I would say it's a combination of both.
Mm-hmm. In our new kitchen, we're going to also have a steamer, which we haven't had. So I'm really looking forward to having the steamer.
Uh-huh. And I will add, whenever we have the opportunity to send raw vegetables,
raw fresh,
that's really the preferred option.
Uh-huh.
So it's a combination of all.
Right. So you do a lot of salads, I would guess, as well.
This time of year we do. We like this, particularly this week, they were making yesterday this beautiful Thai salad and the colors were just amazing. And that's the other thing about what we do every week. We're really conscious about different flavors, different textures. We want everything to be really colorful because we know when somebody's not feeling well and they go to the kitchen and they open that refrigerator, when there's something beautiful in there, they're probably more apt to give it a try because they know they should. But if there was a white piece of, you know, white chicken and white rice, probably not as apt to try it. So color and texture and flavor and spices all go into our thinking every week with our menus.
Right. So what's in the Thai salad? Maybe you can share that with us.
Oh, gosh, I knew you were going to ask me that.
I'm sorry.
I believe it was fresh kale, mint, fresh green beans, pea pods, peppers, three different yellow, red, orange peppers, fresh heirloom tomatoes, onion. It was beautiful. Mm.
And it smelled delicious.
And then this beautiful homemade dressing that goes over it.
Uh-huh. Sounds yummy.
I still have some
pea pods in my fridge. You know, the pea pods are finished in the garden now, but I still have a big bag. They last a long time. And I have peppers, mm-hmm. and I have everything there. Kale, mint, tomatoes.
You're close.
I'm going to give it a try.
Yes.
So how can some of my listeners find out more about you and, you know, get involved or hopefully make a donation and help support your work?
Our website is a great place to go. It's healingmealsproject.org, and there you will find information about our community events. We have a couple of exciting things coming up. We have a fundraiser on September 12th. Our biggest fundraiser of the year is the Eversource Hartford Marathon. We have a great team. We are always looking for corporate sponsors, runners and walkers. Also on the website, there's information about our next orientation, and there is a donate now button as well. So that's a great place for people to go. We're also on social media. On Instagram, we're Healing Meals Project, and on Facebook, we're Healing Meals Community Project.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And we're almost out of time, but just one other thing that I meant to come back to. You mentioned community meals, community dinners. What do you do in the community that brings everybody together?
What's exciting is we've had some funding from a local corporation who really shares our passion and interest in bringing our community together. And so we've been able to do a community dinner series. We actually have one tonight, which is based around yoga. So we're doing yoga outdoors. There are about 60 people. And then we're coming together for community dinner under our pavilion. We have another one coming up on September 12th. And the objective is to just replicate our model. So the youth are in the kitchen creating the meals for the dinner. They will come and they will serve. They will do a short presentation. We always have a theme. Tonight is Feed Your Spirit. And then we have another one in September, which is Feed Your Soul. And it's just a nice way to showcase our local farmers, our volunteers, and bring people together around a meal for some great conversation around topics that we're passionate about.
Oh, that sounds lovely. That's really great. That's really great. Well, Sarah and Ellen, thank you so much for joining me. I love what you're doing. It's really wonderful. And, you know, maybe one of these days my sister and I will come join you for the one of those community dinners. It really sounds like a great, fun thing. And I assume those are fundraisers, right?
Correct. They are. We would love to have you.
Great. Well, everyone out there who's joined us, thank you so much for joining us this week. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'll see you all again next week. Bye
thank
for now.
You.